From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Today we continue our coverage of this year's presidential election in the U.S. and the impact that it may have around the world by talking with Peter Laveau, the host of RT's Crosstalk. We spoke with him via Skype from Moscow Tuesday. Peter, welcome back. You had some great guests yesterday. Bruce Fein, constitutional lawyer, one of the lawyers for the Watergate investigation, for example. And, of course, Professor Mark Crispin Miller, who has written about election theft extensively and also about propaganda. He's from NYU. Brilliant guys. I felt like I was swimming with you and them with the big boys.
Well, you know, one of the important things that we try to do, like you do, is look at the much larger picture. I mean, as part of my job, I have to watch all the U.S. networks. And for me, that is very painful.
Child. Yeah, poor child.
So very, no, the bar is so low. And I'm really not interested in titillating stories. I'm really worried about the fate of the country. And because I'm worried about the fate of the country, I'm worried about the fate of the world. Right. This is a very dangerous time that we're living in right now. And whatever the outcome of the election, there is going to be good reason for many, many people to say that it was rigged, but for many different reasons.
Yeah. Hey, well, there are many different techniques for rigging it, too.
Exactly.
And we've been looking, you've been covering extensively, and RT, generally, the obvious just unity of opinion of the media behind the Clinton campaign, acting as an adjunct, if not the brains of a campaign against Trump and against the independent candidates and against any analysis of the actual phenomenon that are being well represented in this election, that people lined up behind Sanders, who called himself a socialist, that people lined up behind Trump, even though he's a Republican, washed out the Republican leadership from the Republican Party, threw away abortion and gay rights as unifying principles, and instead decided that getting jobs was most important.
Yeah.
And then the rise of both Johnson and Jill Stein in the polls, and I'm certain their support is much stronger than being reported, but they're actually reporting it. This is an amazing coalescing of things that's happening that we see represented in the electoral sphere.
Yeah, but one of the things I think I'm very concerned about, and something both of you are, and both of us are involved in, I use the word this election is rigged because I do it from the perspective of the corporate media. And how much they have backed and even helped plan the Clinton campaign. We have Donna Brazile. I remember watching when Megan over at Fox was asking Donna Brazile, did you give the question to the Clinton campaign? And of course, she wouldn't answer the question. And now we know that she was in collusion. Right. I mean, in any other election, this would have been called out so loud and clear and condemned. But this is just another drop in the bucket, I mean, from what we've been seeing here. I mean, watching CNN, I mean, it does look like the PR agency for the Clinton administration. I'm sorry, Clinton campaign. Right. And what's really worrisome that if she does win, there's going to be this almost instantaneous disenfranchising of tens of millions of people in America. I mean, you can think what you want of Donald Trump. He's a very complicated, even tragic figure in many ways.
Right.
But he is giving a voice to people that are sick and tired of this dumbing down, saccharine message that you get from the corporate media.
Yep. Yeah, you can look at the polling numbers, even those conducted by that self-same media, that show that the public confidence in the media is in single digits here. And you know, your point about, at first, the slip of the tongue saying as a mouthpiece for the Clinton administration is actually prescient because, you know, if Hillary Clinton wins on Tuesday, then the media's role is going to be a mouthpiece for the administration. And that is not the role it's supposed to play.
Well, the interesting thing, too, is that if you look at everything that's come out from WikiLeaks, which, of course, corporate media, you know, shoots the messenger instead of the message, you know, there are people in the FBI, and from what I have been told, and this is all secondhand, of course, that there is a revolt within this, the FBI against Comey for his decision-making in dealing with this investigation of the Clinton emails. There are going to be a lot of people in the FBI that are going to want to have to, well, they want to redeem the Bureau after this election, if she's elected. I mean, they have years of work ahead of them, Don. Years right. of work.
That's right.
I mean, considering what we've learned today with the latest revelations with the Clinton Foundation. I mean, they're again on an entirely different new path to go down. And if she's going to be elected and inaugurated, she's going to be lawyered to death for at least 2 years. Right. That's 2 years the U.S. cannot lose in making very important decisions for the American people. You know, it's no surprise that Bernie Sanders, he had it stolen from him. And we know that. There's not enough of an outcry about that.
Right.
Donald Trump, again, a complicated figure, but both Bernie Sanders and Trump are insurrection candidates. And there's a reason people want insurrection, because a lot of people cannot find the status quo tenable. And this is why I'm very concerned that we could have some kind of social unrest. And unrest is a gentle word, and we could have an explosion.
Right. You know, I've been looking at Lenin a lot. State and revolution and imperialism, the highest form of capitalism in particular, because there are so many things. Well, first, the periods in which they were written, there's an awful lot of similarities to what's going on in the United States right now. And really, the word that describes the way large parts of the population here are viewing the existing conditions is intolerable. The conditions have reached a point where millions of people find their lives intolerable, and they're motivated to do things way outside of the box that's been laid out for them for most of their lives. And that, you know, that is by definition a pre-revolutionary condition. Now, how ripe it is a matter, you know, for people to pull out their slide rules, if they remember what they are, or the calculators, and try to parse. But, you know, there's going to be a large part of the population that doesn't accept the election results, regardless of what they are or on what basis, whether it was because of propagandizing, weighted the scales, or because of outright theft that was performed in the primaries and or next Tuesday, or whatever. And they're angry, and their condition is not going to improve. And so, yeah, the conditions for unrest are, you know, ripening, in my opinion.
You know, it's a really sad comment, a testament to the breakdown of some of the most fundamental pillars of how we think of our republic. You know, 1800 was in a very important year in the United States for reasons that most people don't know, because Americans just don't learn history. But that was a transfer of power from one party to another, and it was done peacefully. You had Richard Nixon. That might have won the election in 1960, but there was rigging in the state of Illinois.
Right.
But did he protest it? No. Why? I mean, here's a politician that is demonized to this day, but he did it for the good of the country, so there would be a legitimate leader. And then we had in 2000, we had the Supreme Court that it was politically biased that gave it to Bush. I mean, step by step, we're losing the legitimacy of the republic is crumbling. Because you're absolutely right. Personally, if Hillary Clinton is elected, I would doubt her legitimacy in the extreme. Considering what she did to Bernie Sanders, that's enough, isn't it? Isn't that just enough to doubt this entire process? And, you know, and I'm not I'm touting Bernie Sanders because he was my candidate. I liked a lot of things he had to say, because I think he started a conversation that is so necessary in America and the Western world. And here we have a candidate in the mainstream media that is just going to continue with the status quo. That is out of touch. That is out of touch with a good part of the population.
Well, if you look at the primary results and aggregate Sanders' vote and Trump's vote, you know, you're looking at something around two-thirds of the people that voting for radical change. That sentiment exists throughout the population, and you have the entire elite configured around Clinton in opposition to that, essentially. And, you know, the legitimacy of that outcome, no matter how people do the calculus, is going to be questioned at a fundamental level. And I don't think in worsening economic conditions, which is what we're going to get, that's going to go away. And so, again, we come back to, you know, the possibility of both what we discussed yesterday, is constitutional crisis in terms of how it works through the legal processes, and also just fundamental sense or practice of revolt.
You know, the irony of all of this is that during most of the history of the United States, the United States government has promoted regime change around the world. In the 19th century, it was primarily, well, was exclusively, as far as I understand, in the Western Hemisphere. Oh, we can start with the Philippines at the very end.
Yeah.
And in the 20th century, you know, all over the world. And who would have thought that this mentality of forcing political change abroad, that mentality, that way of thinking about politics has come to roost at home, because there are going to be people that say, we need a regime change. And I say these words very carefully, Don, okay? I don't want to see chaos, because chaos always hurts the people that are that cannot protect themselves.
Agreed.
But it's patently clear to me that the very legitimacy of the republic is crumbling, and Hillary Clinton is absolutely the worst person, the last person to try to carry on for us. I mean, if she did care about this country, look, she and her husband have made tons, buckets of money, okay? Go away. Go with your ill-gotten gains and just go away. And you know, this is something that is that people are going to have to deal with for if she's elected for all, her entire term. I can't imagine she could run for a second term given her health issues. But this country is going to take a four-year break, and I think there are going to be people that want to take power into their own hands, because Hillary Clinton, again, is absolutely the last person to lead this country for the next 4 years.
Yeah. I mean, and as far as the chickens coming home to roost, actually, at the end of the 18th century, the first regime change project, in my mind, is the one that took place in what's now called Libya, when they formed the U.S. Navy to go over and fight quote-unquote pirates, that is,
sure,
Libyans who were trying to tax commerce going on in their ports. And they succeeded.
Yeah, this glib attitude about being able to enforce change is something that they're going to live to regret, because the forces that are being unleashed right now, you know, I watch very carefully the rallies that Trump has. And they're not the rowdies, the deplorables.
Right.
I mean, I don't know if you saw that piece. I think it was on CNN. There was some idiot at a rally, at a Trump rally, and he was saying, when everyone was cheering USA, USA, he was saying Jew-USA, Jew-USA.
Right.
And CNN just zoomed in on that,
right.
Okay?
Right.
I mean, for
right.
goodness sake, if you have 15,000, 30,000 people, every single one of them Donald Trump is responsible for. I mean, and who, for all we know, that was just a plant from the Hillary Clinton campaign
right.
to disrupt that rally. And we know we have evidence that they were doing that.
That's
we
right.
have confessions, essentially, of that.
Recordings of them doing it. We have recordings of them doing it. Yeah, you know.
No, but I look at those people in those rallies, and I see how I was brought up. I see my own family, and I see the people I went to high school with. These are people. I mean, you know, people just don't go to a political rally on a whim. People simply
right.
don't do that.
That's right.
In the American population, there's a small percentage of people that are highly politically motivated, and they go to rallies. But most people don't do that. And if you look at these people are motivated because they've got a reason to be motivated.
That's right.
Not just to see a quote-unquote rock star, no. But I think they see hope, the kind of hope that people had maybe with Barack Obama. I mean, Barack Obama is the biggest disappointment. I mean, he's on the right. bottom top lowest 10 worst presidents in American history, in my opinion. I mean, he's right up there with Buchanan, because, you know, after Buchanan, you know what happened in the United States. You know, we had a civil war.
Right.
And that's something that, you know, that those two words, civil war, may be bandied about and not in the not too far future.
Yeah. You know, and what we're seeing with the expression now of this dissatisfaction is the frustrated effort in 2008. I mean, they elected Barack Obama He's the first black man elected president in the history of the country, and a year before, no one would have predicted that that was even possible. So people put aside a whole lot of stuff that's been traditionally operative in the political system, racism. They put that aside. The message was change. You know, there was hope, but change was the message they were voting for, and their condition was becoming extremely precarious at that point in time, and they elected him, and what he did, he was the candidate of the establishment. And I mean, that's where the money went. And so what he did was set Wall Street back on its feet at the expense of the rest of us. And
my goodness, wasn't that a wonderful thing to do? Okay. Yeah. They just keep inflating the tire that has a hole in it. You know, one of the things that's so interesting what you just said about Barack Obama, and it's something that as a social conservative, I truly lament his presidency, because all he did was play the cultural wars. And you know what? I think that's when I look at a lot of people supporting Donald Trump. They're not misogynistic. They're not racist. They're not anti-Semitic. They're just sick and tired. And I think a lot of people are just sick and tired of these cultural wars. I mean, fine, we can have these debates about transgender toilets if you want, but everybody needs a job first.
That's right.
Yep. Just tell me everyone gets a decent wage, a living wage, and then we can go back and talk about these things, okay? That's right. Perfectly fine. But get your priorities straight. You have to get the country running again. And you know, Don, I'll tell you, I'm very pessimistic, because this globalization that has been so embraced by the elites, it may be already too late, seriously. How the country has just deteriorated, its infrastructure, and I think a lot of people, even their hopes have been deteriorated, because if there's no hope out there, then we go back to the social uprising and conflicts that is possible, because then there's no reason to have any more civil debate. There's no more reason to compromise. How many years do you have to compromise? How many years do you have to see when your parents live better than you, and you know your children are not going to even live as well as you are? I mean, that is a very, very dismal prognosis for the United States.
You know, I'm going to go back to my left critique of things for a moment and look at, you have this division among the working class, who are the ones that are, you know, basically conducting this uprising. Those and broad sectors of what was called the middle class before, whether it was accurately designated or not. And the divisions that exist in that class, as represented by people that supported Sanders, people that supported Trump, and the people that are in the streets. They're all working class. They really all have the same needs. Even, you know, transgendered people, while people are arguing over toilets, need jobs.
Agreed.
All across the board. And there is no place to have the discussion about how to achieve unity about that in the public space. Instead, the distinctions are excited, and they're pitted one against the other. The Sanders people are told Trump is a misogynist and Trump is Islamophobe and anti-immigrant and all this stuff, regardless of what he is, and ignore those people behind him that are actually your class brothers, because they're behind him and therefore they're also that. The people in the streets, the same thing. The effort by the Clinton campaign to prevent a joining of Black Lives Matter in the Sanders campaign, for example. You know, these are things that are... they're designed to keep us from, finding some common platform to articulate politically.
They say Hillary Clinton was in Florida. I don't know what city it was. And instead of talking about how her vision to rebuild America, she brings out a former Miss America contestant or winner or something like that. And, you know, and Donald Trump called her piggy. Okay. Right. All right. You know, that wasn't a nice thing to say. But that doesn't, you know, what Donald Trump said about that woman isn't going to have any impact whatsoever on the future of the country.
That's right.
And this is the kind of thing I don't like. We don't need to focus in that. I'm agreeing with you completely. I mean, we have these common interests. And, you know, it's not academic anymore, Don. It's not. This is here and now. This is real. And these empty words that we've coming up, you know, the Democratic Party is just such a deplorable institution right now. I mean, it has betrayed everything that its forefathers instilled into us. I mean, I was a flaming liberal, I'll tell your listeners that, for a very long time. But it's because of the erosion of real values in the Democratic Party, I've had to leave.
Yeah. And the problem is, where do you go? That's always been the problem here, because any real alternatives are completely ignored, shut out of the discussion. It would have been nice to see Jill Stein and Gary Johnson and maybe some others, Monica Moorhead and Gloria LaRiva, for example, in a debate. I mean, what is the big problem with that? So you run it for 4 hours instead of two.
I think the big problem is that Jill Stein can tear them both to pieces. Okay. Well, she can.
Yeah, I know it.
She knows the issues. She knows the issues very well. Yeah. I don't agree with everything she has to say, but she can give a compelling argument. And Hillary Clinton just memorizes everything or is given the question so she knows what the answer is. What a pathetic... You know, what a pathetic state of affairs this is here. And Donald Trump, you know, he speaks from the gut, okay? He shoots from the hip. He doesn't always get it right, okay? And you can disagree with him, but there's still authenticity there. He is authentic, if you like him or not, okay? Jill Stein is brainy. She's very brainy.
And, you know, one of the things also, I was really fortunate that I ended up going to the two conventions. And, you know, I'm looking at the media coverage of the campaign up to that point and participating in it. There are people interviewing me as well. You know, you have this image of what Trump supporters are that was being peddled, the deplorables and all of that, even before they articulated that term. And then I met them. And then I saw what was really happening at the convention. You know, I went drinking with these deplorables, quote unquote, you know, and the same in Philadelphia, where I was watching the media report of what was going on. And they were showing it, you know, Stronger Together was the logo. And, you know, it was a picture of unity on television when, in fact, the people were in the streets, tens of thousands, and also half of the delegates were walking out every day, holding signs, indictor, all kinds of things, stringing them in the halls. None of that made the media. Meanwhile, the Republican convention, which was like a love fest behind statements from Trump, where they stood up for him saying no more interventions and things like that. That was, they'd have like a Nazi they found in two towns away from Cleveland that they'd interviewed and say, yeah, Trump's okay with me. And that's who these people are.
It's just like today I was reading is that some Ku Klux Klan newspaper, I don't even follow these groups. Why would I?
Right.
But it's been reported they're endorsing Donald Trump.
Right.
And what do you want? What are you getting at? Right. Okay. I mean, there are people that can, all kinds of people with all kinds of ideas can go and vote. Okay. Right. I mean, if they support a candidate that I support, but for very different reasons, I think that should be acknowledged. But the mainstream, what it does is this says, no, it's like, with how they bring Russia into the American election. Right. Trump is Putin, Putin's Russia, Russia's evil, okay? Right. I mean, again, I think I already said in our interview here, you know, they're just lowering of the bar, constantly lowering of the bar. Or a spokesperson for the Clinton Foundation said today, why should the foundation be shut down if Hillary becomes president? Because we're still fighting AIDS, okay? No, you're shaking down billionaires for Bill, okay, and enriching these people because of their name. Okay, fine, but this couple is still in politics, and there's a huge conflict of interest here. Because, again, the mainstream media is just so inept or purposely inept. It's this more than any other reason. Look, there's corruption all the time. We both accept that, okay? Some are more corrupt than others. But there was supposed to be a medium to make sure that the scales weren't tipped so much in one direction. And that was what journalism was supposed to do. That's what we're supposed to
do. Right. That's right.
And this is the ultimate collapse of it. And how do you get that trust back? That's why people listen to us. That's why they watch RT. It's no conspiracy.
Right.
It's a pack of lies. And, you know, the longer I live outside of the United States, the more I realize, and I hate to say this, the more I realized that almost everything I was told was a lie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you have to move very far away from it. I don't know how you do it, living inside that information bubble. See, I live outside of it, and I have interaction with it in a very cursory way. I volunteer to go in and, you know, and be inside that bubble, but then I leave. I leave it, and it keeps my head clear, very clear. I can watch the presidential debates, and I can give you a clear-eyed view who won. I'm sorry, Trump won every single one of those debates, in my opinion, okay? Yep. Every single one, hands down. But, you know, CNN, oh, Trump wins 70 to 30 or something. And that's something. There's something terribly, terribly wrong there. And it is, it's so corrupt. And these Clintons, they've corrupt everything they touch, they corrupt. I was thinking of an analogy. It's like cancer in a cesspool. I might use that tomorrow on Crosstalk.
Yeah, one of the things that I find in the bubble here, you know, Crosstalk and RT generally, Sputnik News, CCTV, Telesur, Press TV, you know, global media, and, you know, from places that are not inside that same information bubble, you know, not that this is the source of truth, but here's some more facts that aren't even part of the narrative that you need to consider. And that, and going to original sources, like, you know, unfortunately, I have to look at the UN media website every day to see what happened there. And rather than looking at the cooked pieces that come out of the press corps down there that favor the United States, I'll look at the actual substantive. I'll watch the whole meeting, for example, of the Security Council, and do the same with the State Department, and do the same with the President, and, you know, with the White House pressers, and look at the
original. Because you're doing your homework. You're doing your homework like you should. That's exactly what I do.
Yeah.
Exactly what you do.
And it's so, and Zakharova, the same, you know, and every time Lavrov goes out, like I ran on my morning radio show this morning, Lavrov and the Greek foreign minister's presser yesterday. You know, these are things that if you want to have an idea of what's really going on in the world, you have to look at it. And who the hell has time for that?
That's why I go to individuals that I know, and they write prolifically. And this is, you go to people you trust, and people have got it right most of the time. And that's the way you should do it. At least 4 hours a day, sometimes more, just scouring everyone that I want to find. I find some new people every once in a while. I like antiwar.com a lot.
Yeah.
And that's doing going the extra mile, because if you just listen to the sound bites coming out of these YouTube clips, which I spend a lot of time on, you're going to get a very skewed view of the world. And it's just, you need to be more sober when you look at these things here. Like I said before, I stay away from the titillation. I'm not interested in that. I'm interested in the substance. Right. And because I'm very, very worried about the path that we're all going down. Because it looks extremely likely, if you look at the electoral map, you know, it's going to be a Hail Mary for Donald Trump. It's very possible he could get the majority of the popular vote, and then that's going to again put into question the legitimacy of this election. And and a lot of people are going to say, what do we need elections for if the guy that got the most votes didn't win? We go back to Gore in 2000.
Right. And Trump, though, isn't going to go quietly into that good night, I think, as much as Gore did.
I think he will go quietly, but it's going to be a lot of people that will take the mantle. I think that we haven't heard the end of the Bernie Sanders people. Okay. I'm very, very distraught about the things that I've heard about Bernie since he left the campaign. Basically selling out, but his movement has and his ideas stand, and Trump's ideas stand. I mean, he'll be a flash in the pan afterwards. I mean, I don't think he's going to lead any kind of revolution. I doubt that. But there's going to be a lot of people that will turn their back on what you and I and all of us were brought up to respect legitimate authority. It's like I tell a lot of my Russian friends, is that I do not like Barack Obama at all. I call him the empty suit president. But as an American and having civic pride, I respect the presidency. I respect the office. And that, you know, considering what Bill Clinton did to George W. Bush, now Barack Obama, and possibly now Hillary Clinton, what is the value of the presidency? What moral value does it have? We don't even think about it in terms of moral values anymore. That's, again, something that we've lost.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.